Check the vibe. Vibe check.
What's the vibe like?
How we living?
What is the vibe like? I'm feeling good.
You feeling great?
How are you? Yeah.
Special guest coming in. Friend of the brethren. One of my favorite people alive. Michael Longfellow.
Vibes are good, dude. Vibes are good with me.
Vibes are very good.
Vibes are great. Are
good. Michael Longfellow, you might have seen him on Conan O'Brien.
Hey.
Was that, when was that? Was that last year?
That was a fucking lifetime ago.
Feels like it, right?
You can never take that.
You're one of my favorite people, too, by the way. Thanks for saying that.
Hey, there we go. Yeah, we both Arizona connections. Longfellow came up in the Arizona thing scene. I think stand-up-wise, I feel like we probably started like within the first or within the like year or two window of each other. Probably, right?
Yeah, the same era. I don't know exactly. I don't even remember when I exactly started. I remember it was cold.
don't you think
whenever summer comes around again, I give myself another year.
The people that are like, this is when I started stand-up comedy. It's like, you probably sucked that day, though.
Probably, yeah. I don't know. I don't remember the day of my first show. I remember my first show. I don't remember the day.
I remember being around Easter-ish.
Yeah, so I remember generally a season.
Where was the first time that you guys went on? Do you remember where it was, at least?
Michael, when was it for you?
It was stand-up Scottsdale. Remember the Wednesday open mic?
Oh, of course.
I remember that.
Well, John, weren't so fun fact that John doesn't talk about a lot, but he definitely did stand up the same night I did stand up, right?
Yeah. Did you do it more than that, or was it just a one-off?
I did it a few times. I've been telling jokes my whole life, but yeah, I got up there and told. I had a pretty good joke about basically Catholic school, like camp, or like religious camp or whatever, how they tell you not to do what not to do, and then they give you a place to go do all of those things inside of a cabin.
It's a good Eyebrow. Premise.
Yeah.
Good. Solid premise.
Lot there. lot to dig.
Where'd you go, Longfellow? Weren't you on Tempe or something? Like one of
Yeah,
those
I did the Tempe Center for the Arts. I did the writing class for like 6 weeks, and then you do a showcase show at the end of it.
Which you're a rare breed of people that like come out of
that took a class and came out of the class and aren't insane.
That's a very rare
and aren't crazy. You're right. I think it's because I was young and it really felt like it was me and then a bunch of 60-year-old people that wanted to do it like once as like a bucket list thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be the best. So I don't know. It is what you make it, I guess. But those do seem to attract a weird bunch.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say so. Yeah. I mean, you guys are pretty weird. You're my two favorite Michaels maybe in the world.
Yeah, it's weird when they're you guys are kind of weird.
We're weird
in the weird way.
I think we're weird when you get to know us a lot. But, like, for the most part, I think we're generally pretty normal. When you really take the, like, generalize every comedian, there are some true weirdos out there. Even the funny.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like, socially inept. So I'm glad that we are, I feel like, relatively normal people in my eyes. But I'm also
I'm not like Emo Phillips or something, but yeah. it's a healthy balance between those two worlds.
I've driven in a car with him. He had an accordion, so yeah, he's weird.
It's probably great. Love Emo. No disrespect to Emo.
Super.
But I don't think you could. Yeah, definitely a weird guy.
Also, I'm super happy John quit. I think we'd both have competition. John would probably be funnier than both of us if he can.
I'll always be funnier than you. You'll just always do it on stage.
True.
There's a lot of exploited for gain and wealth.
Yeah, exactly. We're in it for the money. Just know that you're funnier than us.
Yeah, it's always funny how, like, we like the art, but we're the ones that, like, everyone can be funny.
Yeah when the only qualification is funny, that's why you get those weird. When the qualification is you have to be funny up here, you're going to get some weird people because it's easy to be funny, you know, and it's really hard to do it on stage, though. It's not easy to be funny. I'm sorry. It's hard to do it on stage, though.
No, it's easy.
It is easy. When you really do – yeah, now when I'm like, oh, I got to do 10 minutes, I can do that with my eyes closed. But that's like repetition and repetition, though. That's
That takes like – It really is. I feel like getting good at comedy is just doing it so many times that even you can't convince yourself you don't know how to do this anymore. And I think some people it just takes more, some people it takes less.
True.
But it just feels like that's what it is.
That is true. We finally got to do comedy not only in front of people, they were in their vehicles, but we got to do it together on a show, which was exciting because you were in Arizona. You happened to be in Arizona during the, what was it, the drive-in movie theater car?
Yeah, I guess that's what you could call it.
The comedy experience in your Kia. But
I was in one of those cars. It was fun.
Yeah, you were, yeah, John got to see it. It was pretty fun. But what did you think? What did you get the rush back? Did you feel alive?
Dude, I mean, awesome to do anything. Very excited to do a show with all my friends. Yeah. But I mean, didn't you feel this way where it was like I didn't get off.
It was it was like methadone. I think that's, I've never taken methadone, but I think that it weans you off heroin.
Yeah, volume back is a huge thing, I guess, for me. Like hearing a response to my joke, and it was pretty difficult with the cars. So my instinct when I don't hear laughter after I tell a joke is to panic and to switch what I'm talking about. But really, in those, you have to be like almost like a sociopath. You have to be like, they're laughing. So I'll take a little pause because they have to be laughing. And you know, it like everyone, I remember everyone got off stage and was like, that was fun, but also I did okay, right? Like it was okay. Yeah, we all had to reassure each other that it was fine.
Yeah, that was a strange experience coming back. I think it was just exciting to be in the act of doing it, but yeah, it was like, are they honking at me or with me?
Yeah.
So that was kind of strange. But John, you like thought it was a fun experience for a comedy viewer.
I think you guys did do well. You worked funny. It was just interesting that you could talk about the joke. If you liked the joke in the car, you could talk to your friend like, oh, that was funny. Or he did this there or something. And in a comedy show, an actual comedy show, you would be like, hey, shut up. You know what I mean? You'd be heckling or interrupting the show, but you could actually talk about it. It was kind of cool.
It allowed table talk.
I would much more prefer to be in an actual live comedy club, but that was one takeaway I liked about it.
It seems like something that is geared towards the audience.
Yes. Like, yeah,
joy is being reserved for the audience.
Yeah. That one was for us, for sure. Yeah,
we're
but that's not what it's supposed to be about, right? Shouldn't that be? We're in
art is for the
audience,
for the other people. Yeah.
Why should we need any laughter back?
Loving you is loving me.
Enjoy. Yeah, I should be always enjoyed in the backseat of a 4Runner.
There's a joke there.
Yeah, that's going to crush in front of a live audience with no 4Runners. Zero 4Runners. But it's creeping back. It's exciting, actually. Comedy is kind of inching back. Chappelle and I went back to Phoenix and did some shows with Shane Gillis the week after that, which was exciting. So
yeah,
the laughter will be heard soon for you again.
It'll be back.
Yeah, it'll be back. Have you been consuming the time with anything like how are you keeping your brain even active? Are you doing anything specific?
How am I staying sharp and stuff? I read a lot.
What are you reading?
Because that's the old cliche of staying sharp is reading. Right now I'm reading, I don't want to even say it because it makes me sound like an asshole.
Everybody Poops?
The Holy Bible.
I'm reading Infinite Jest, which is like one of the most obnoxious books ever written. But I didn't know anything about it when I got into it. I didn't know who David Foster Wallace was. So yeah. I got kind of blind. And I mean, it's confusing as hell. But
isn't that a book people like love or hate?
Yeah, it's really divided people.
Yeah.
Where are you on that spectrum? Do you love it or hate it so far?
So far, I like it a lot, but I definitely understand why people would hate it.
Yeah.
They're not wrong in any way.
I'm doing audiobooks.
Those are good.
I'm being talked to. It's,
yeah, you know, it's better than nothing.
It's interactive, yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. I can understand. I'm trying to figure out why the Comanches were the way they were. Pretty aggressive people. And then I'm being talked to about how we're in the fourth turning and that this is actually supposed to happen. The chaotic world that we currently live in was already predicted.
Oh, this is fake.
So that's
already supposed to happen. Okay.
It's called the fourth turning. Shout out to Evan Pearson.
Well, it's good to know the prophecy speaks of these times.
Yes, and they pretty much said that this is going to be the craziest time ever and there should be something coming after this. That might be okay if we live.
Dude,
we just got to get through it.
I can't wait for uninteresting times again.
Oh, the 90s were great.
I just want to live in a boring, uninteresting time.
Yeah, to choose to be bored, though. To be like, I want to go home and be bored. The forced boredom is hard.
Yeah, but it's almost like you can be bored, and then you look at your phone, and then you're, like, bored and anxious for whatever reason.
True.
It's not
the
a fun,
worst combination.
Not a fun combo emotions. At all. I'm bored and anxious. Nothing to do, and I'm fucking worried about it.
It's a tough time because you're supposed to be, like, informed right now, but then, like, there's a level of being too informed where you're, like, all right, I'm not okay anymore. Now I'm
super woke.
And aware.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's interesting times. It's fun.
I'm reading Chris Cornell's biography.
You are? R.I.P.
Which is pretty interesting. Yeah, it's pretty good. So, that was an interesting time as well. Very depressing in the 90s in Seattle.
Yeah, heroin was...
Sometimes I have to put it down. I'm like, I don't want to read this right now. This is pretty sad.
Heroin had a good run in the 90s. It's made a huge comeback.
It really has.
Yeah.
They made it less scary with a nice little pill.
So, yeah.
It kind of backdoored its way back into our life, which is shout out to it for being adaptive.
Shout out to Big Pharma.
Big Pharma.
I mean, eventually you got to admire success.
True. And it's happened so much time and time again. They're undefeated. Heroin's undefeated. A lot of good runs for these people.
A lot of good runs.
So you got to respect
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Longfellow, I know you grew up in Phoenix. What part of Phoenix did you grow up in again?
I grew up initially in Gilbert, and then we moved to Scottsdale.
Nice. You don't have to That's say good. It so moved to Scottsdale.
Yeah, well, I do. Everyone's like, oh, really?
Yeah, would you say, like, of the people you've ever met in your life, you've got the most uninteresting youth? Probably top five.
Yeah, I guess top five. Top five for sure.
At least you moved to Scottsdale. Imagine growing up
in the way that there was no, like, real danger ever present.
Yeah.
What was the most danger? What was the realest danger you ever felt? Like a bobcat maybe in your backyard or something like that? Or?
Never even that. The realest danger I ever felt as a kid? Oh, that's a good question, man. I think that's why maybe I get anxious now is because I never had someone beat the shit out of me or something. I never had the fear stuck in my heart, you know?
True.
So I don't, now I'm thrown in these real life situations and that was definitely a curve. Dude, the realization that you grew up in a bubble is real for sure.
That's true, yeah.
And Scottsdale couldn't be any more of a bubble.
Oh yeah.
It's the most ridiculous place in the world.
Bubble boy.
It is a crazy place.
I work there. It's a weird, weird environment. It is. Whenever I'm working brunch, I'm just like, that girl probably got up like 3 hours ago to put makeup on to come to this 11 o'clock brunch. And she doesn't like anybody at the table. You know what I mean? Yeah. None of them. It's a strange, strange place.
Or like just watching like the current like CNN news cycle, right? Like with Black Lives Matter movement and like all these riot stuff going on in Portland. And you wake up and you walk out and you're in Scottsdale. You're like, that's never going to impact that little section of America.
Yep.
It's got the Wakanda.
They ride
like the
at
opposite of Wakanda. It's got like this bubble of whiteness inside.
It's literally just the heat is the threat there. It's too hot.
Hot.
Don't
man.
Go hiking
yeah.
on that day.
That is true.
So true.
You never lose a friend to like stray bullet or anything like that. How did he die? He forgot to bring enough water. On
yeah. Dehydration.
And that's real. I actually
heat stroke is a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually super sad. But also, you're like, what could he have done to avoid this? Well, Evian comes to mind. it's real, real danger. But you also, just like us, broken home. Child of divorce, I think it's important.
Yeah, I guess I grew up in a car. I guess for a while my dad didn't live in Scottsdale, so I'd spend half my time Phoenix area.
Oh, he looks nice. Like a North Phoenix.
But then he eventually moved to Scottsdale.
Yeah, that 10-minute drive. That 10-minute drive to North Phoenix was like, oh shit, we're in the gutter now.
What were those Phoenix cross streets? That sounds pretty tough.
I can't even remember. I was so young.
He's probably, he definitely looks like a
20. I still drive by him. So I see the apartment complex he moved. We used to, when he was married to Doreen, she had the nicest like gated community house. And then he got divorced. We moved in this apartment with brown carpets. I was so pissed. Like, Dad, fix it with Doreen. Like, patch it up.
Lock it up.
I know you're not happy, carpets. But
it looked like desert camouflage, you know.
That's tough. Did he at least have like,
it's real tough for Scottsdale
or anything?
Huh?
Did he have HBO and cable growing up, though?
No, we had movies, though. He had a huge VHS, which is funny to think about, like, a giant VHS collection being, like, 100 movies, maybe, because yeah. They take up so much space.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, he was
an entire bookcase.
VHS collection.
What were you – we were big movie guys growing up, too. Our father was a huge movie guy. Were you were there any movies that stood out to you growing up?
Lord of the Rings. Classic. Lord of the Rings was this shit.
Really spoke to you?
Dude, I love Lord of the Rings. I still do. I still watch it once a year.
Yeah, it's what's your favorite one? I know mine.
Twin Towers.
Yeah, the second one. Right?
Second one, best battle scene at the end for
sure.
He's
got 9/11 on the mind. I like that. The Twin Towers. I think it's the Two Towers. He's like, I love that movie. Yeah, falling down.
It's all I can think about.
9/11. I like The Fellowship of the Ring is my favorite one.
That's a good one, too.
Love The Fellowship of the Ring.
It's formative. They're all good.
The fun fact about the third one, the third one's like it's just like nonstop, pretty much action. I think maybe 30 minutes of chilling. I took an edible for the first time. It was like a cosmic brownie. I ate this edible, and we went, and I was so high, I passed out so hard in that movie that I fell asleep throughout the entire third Lord of the Rings, which if you think about how loud that is in a theater,
loud film, pretty impressive.
That's a wow.
Yeah, I woke up and there's several dragons and an eagle. And
I think I had a similar experience for Two Towers. What was the midnight showing too? So you're up late anyways. It wasn't like a middle of the day situation. And yeah, we just got so high. And I remember the very beginning of the movie is Wang Nut. It's a Wang Nut film or something like that. And our friend's nickname was Wang Nut. And we probably laughed out for 15 minutes throughout the beginning of the movie. And people were just turning around like, please stop laughing. But I don't know.
Your friend's nickname was Wang Nut?
Wang Nut. Yeah, well, we called him Wang Nut. Yeah.
Why'd you call him Wang Nut?
I can't even remember. Wang Nut. Yeah, we called him D. Hyatt. Shout out.
The Wang Nut. That's a great name.
Just call him Dick Balls.
It'd just be like, you Wang Nut. Shut up, Wang Nut.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings. I mean, edibles are hard drugs, guys. I'm tired of us all pretending they're not.
Oh, it's hard life to live.
Edibles are tough. Edibles hit you just way different than smoking a bowl. And they creep up on you because you forget you ate it. I think a lot of times I'm like 30 minutes in and I'm like, what is this? And then you're like, oh, you just ate a 20 milligram edible. Maybe this is that.
I can't move. Yeah.
And you're driving and you're like, dude, am I already in Ventura? And, and it's tough. Are you an edible guy, Longfellow?
I am because I have shitty lungs.
It's important.
So I try to, but I mean, taking an edible, it's like smoking a bowl is like having a beer, and then taking an edible is like taking 20 shots, and I can't commit to that every night, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to learn. I used to just smoke weed every night to fall asleep. That was how I used it. But my lungs started hurting again, so I have to turn to edibles. But before you know it, dude, your tolerance is crazy. And
yes,
it takes a day to like lift the fuzz off your mind. So it's not sustainable. I'm in a real pickle right now. I'm searching for some natural ways to sleep. If you have any good supplements or anything, if anyone
CBD
listens
helps.
To your podcast.
CBD helps.
CBD, I've tried it.
CBD gummies help me sometimes.
Not as good as THC.
Yeah.
Usually just
I have
busting a nut and then.
Busting a nut?
And then sleeping. Wang nut. Busting a wang nut. And then just.
Busting a wang nut.
Right
passing
away.
Out.
Yeah. I might be on my way out with weed.
Oh, I thought you were going to say busting nuts.
I was like, yeah,
no, I'm not with busting nuts.
Anytime, yeah.
it might be on, you got a foot out the door with weed.
I think so, yeah. I think I have a foot out the door. I think it's a healthy foot. I think it's like an amicable breakup. It's kind of like a, hey, we've been through it all.
We had our time together, yeah. Happy time to move on. What's, I feel like the other foot is still kind of in that door, though.
The other foot's still in that door. Yeah. And the other foot's like, dude, this has collapsed your lung. This is like, you
has
know.
Has it really?
Yeah. And when I was 19, my lung collapsed.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Not from weed, but weed definitely didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that I would stop being into it after that, but, yeah. But no, sir. No, sir. No. I had just gotten started.
Did you tell the doctor?
I just quit yesterday. Yeah,
yeah, I told them. They give you stuff in the hospital that makes you tell everyone everything. I think I told my dad. I was like, I was all fucked up on whatever they give you for pain, because they have to put it. They had to put a tube in my chest, in between my rib cage.
Jeez.
To like suck the air out of whatever was in my chest. And yeah, they give you like a truth serum
For
pain. It's not a truth serum, but you get real honest. It's like you're too drunk.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Dad.
What they give you is Jim Beam. It's pretty much
Dad, I smoke Jim Beam. Weed. Yeah. They basically give you some Jim Beam and a towel to bite on, and you tell your dad everything.
I hate you.
Why did you leave Doreen?
Dad, I miss Doreen.
Yeah, I don't like these carpets, Dad. You're a dick.
Are you doing
I have the same.
Is that kombucha, by the way?
It's a kombucha.
That's big. That's LA.
Oh, LA.
You know, I'm trying to keep it safe, trying to watch the gut. You guys got to watch your guts.
That's true.
Got to watch that gut health. Probiotics.
That's true. Mike, are both of you, please tell me the most LA thing that you've done. The thing that you were like, wow, this is so LA right now.
Hmm.
Hard question.
I've been talking about running on the beach without shoes on and going right into Creation's juice bar and understanding the acai bowl menu very well. That's a pretty and also intermittent fasting has been pretty LA of me.
Are you intermittent fasting?
Yeah, I have. 2 to 6 or 2 to 8, I should say.
Nice. I forget to eat a lot.
That's super LA.
It's a big.
I forgot to eat.
It's like, why am I angry and my stomach hurts? And I'll realize I had eggs at 8 in the morning and it's like 10 p.m.
It is a wild feeling when you're yelling at sir, or when you're mad and you're like, or you eat and then you realize, like, holy shit, I was probably a dick for the past 3 hours to some toast of mine. You know what I mean?
Food's important.
Yeah.
It's
I don't know what the most LA thing I've done is. Probably drinking this kombucha or walking around my gentrified neighborhood with my white ass girlfriend and myself. That's very LA.
That is very LA.
I like that.
LA.
Some super LA shit too is when society was going on, just seeing like I saw Thundercat and I wasn't even that impressed. Like I saw him, like in person,
that's
and
very
I was like,
LA, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's Thundercat. Like you see, like I saw Drew Carey,
a celebrity.
I was like, oh, it's just Drew eating it, swingers, no big deal.
Yeah, that does happen.
Underwhelmed with like seeing people sometimes.
Has that perhaps attacked your drive to reach giant celebrity status, realizing the kind of how much you don't give a shit about some of these celebrities? What scared me is that amazing people have died and you forget about it in like 2 days.
Oh yeah,
them all together stuff that will people that will do way more than I'll ever do in my career.
Yeah,
dead and gone
and forgotten.
And I think it's more these days than it used to be. It feels like we used to remember dead people more. But now it feels like,
Just dropping like some big hitters. I remember when Michael Jackson died. That was gigantic.
But I think also there's this level of like the age of stardom that these people lived in. There's so many more stars.
Yeah.
So obviously more people are dying than we know because we knew so many more. There were so many more stars that you were aware of. During this their lifetime. So there's like, that's like twofold, but also the ability to completely forget. Like one of my favorite things is when you do talk about somebody now, you're like, are they dead? And then not knowing if they're dead or alive. Like, and also yeah. the indifference, if somebody says they are dead and you're like, oh damn, they did that.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I guess they are dead. So it's very fleeting, this fame thing that we have completely, you know, sacrificed our life and several real
at least sacrificed a large part of a normal life for it. For but sure. It is. I, you know, wouldn't change a thing.
No. Yeah. We get to
wouldn't change a thing. And
we would have never gotten to know each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't know Michael Turner or John Turner.
No,
comedy. That is true. That, I mean, comedy's, I wouldn't know so many cool people if it wasn't for comedy.
That's true. That's one of the bigger things to hold on to is like,
and so many different types of people that grew up around me or that I was just, I guess, exposed to growing up.
Yeah.
Proximity wise, I just, you know, you only meet people within your certain area. Mm-hmm. And comedy kind of just brought the whole, I don't know, it just brings everyone from everywhere together.
Because your other path in life was, if I remember correctly from a joke of yours, what, didn't you go to school for English literature or something like
that's
that?
That's right. I was already convinced I was going to be a big star. So I went to the counselor's office and was like, what's going to get my way? Yeah. What's going to get in my way the least? Because I'm busy, you know? I got a lot of, I got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm going to have day. I'm going to have to be traveling for comedy. I did online school for the last 2 years so I could travel for comedy. I never went anywhere once. I stayed in Arizona the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah. But I was like, I'm going to have to be able to travel. I think I went to the comedy store like twice and did a bringer show. Thought I was hot shit.
In the belly room or in the main room?
One was in the main room.
Ooh.
But this was in the old days. This was like, I still feel like, I don't think the guy that runs the show is there anymore. Some Russian guy.
Yeah, probably. I've never done a show on the stage in the main room.
Bro, it was like there was no one there.
Didn't bring anyone
in. It wasn't good. It wasn't fun.
Even the people you brought left. Like, this is, I don't want to do
it. Yeah, I remember that. He didn't, that was cool, but he didn't make me bring anybody. He knew I was from Arizona. He told me I was headlining the show. In the main room, told me this. I'm 19 or 20, so I don't know what any of this. So I think I'm headlining the fucking comedy store.
Yeah.
He brings me up. My doubt that my dad comes out, surprises me, comes sure. out. He's at the show. Didn't know he was going to do that. With, had no
brings
idea.
Brings Doreen. Tells me he's back with Doreen.
We're getting back together.
So I'm emotional the whole set. You know, I'm so happy that they're getting back together.
Moving back in.
He's a dude. He sits front row. He gets made fun of by every comedian for like 40 minutes. There's like 40 comedians on this lineup. I go up. He introduces me as the headliner. And then like 10 comedians went up after me.
Oh, no.
It was so weird, man. And this was like, I could, you know, I could see in my father it wasn't what he thought it was going to be.
Yeah, he just put all that money towards
it. And I didn't have shit.
English literature degree.
To my, yeah, I didn't have anything to my name at this point. It looked like a real dicey career choice still. So it wasn't like an encouraging moment for him. Thank God I, you know,
but you
kept
got,
going at it. But
you had a lot of good steam in Arizona. And then I remember I when did. You left, it made a lot of sense when you left because you had got a little bit of like, sometimes it's just a little bit of momentum. And then you take advantage of it with being super funny every time somebody gives you an opportunity, which is what you were able to do. But you kind of got in with some of those, was it like the Nerd Melt guys before that? Kind
yeah,
of-
I moved because I got booked on the Meltdown, which I, a little bit of like, it's like being naive but working out for me.
Yeah.
Because in hindsight, I don't think that's really reason enough to move your life to LA.
Yeah.
But to me at that time, it was like, oh my God, that's the biggest thing ever.
Got to go.
Yeah, it was easy to move. Went great. Met my manager there. And then I moved and I lived in LA.
Crazy.
But it was definitely like, I'm glad that I was that naive about it, you know?
Yeah, you probably would have thought too much about it, right?
Yeah, logically, it didn't really make sense. But I was like, oh, I have this amazing opportunity. I have to make this work. And then I, you know, did that one show and then sat out here and went to open mics for 6 months. didn't talk to anyone. Tried to make friends. Dude, it was so hard. The first year out here sucked ass, bro. I missed everyone in Arizona. I'm watching literally the worst show ever posters just every month coming out. They look amazing.
You could have headlined every one of them.
I'm like, man, I could have stayed back and like been in, like helped them out or something, or like, I don't know, gone to the shows. I could be a part of this Arizona thing, but I felt like
we did some cool stuff in Arizona, but I always, dude, I definitely thought that it timed out really well for you. And also you're younger. Because how old are you now? Like 27 or something?
26.
So, but when you started, I remember you were just so much younger than when I started when I was like 25. So I was the only a year into comedy when I was your age right now. So the mentality of like risk taking is like completely different with a lot of my like actions and stuff like that. We're like way more calculated, probably because.
Yeah. Cause you're older and you know about life. And you're that, and doing also, the right thing by.
But there's the risk of being 20. You're gonna bounce back, even if you came out here and failed, which true. I don't think you would have.
Time's on your like, side.
You're gonna have time to bounce back, yeah, and like figure it out and fall on your face and stuff like that. So
yeah,
but a lot of stuff I was doing in Arizona was so calculated to, which I also thought. I think both of our paths are very interesting to look at side by side because you definitely did the right thing. I think time will tell where I'm at, but I feel like I'm in a good position where I did a lot of the right things because to the counterpoint of your perspective in the first year, like I came out here, I already know so many people, right?
Yeah.
But it was because of all those years in Arizona, just like laying the groundwork. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Our journeys are good to compare to each other.
But
and I do like, I used to be, it's definitely, I'm realizing I did realize that it's like a marathon, you know, it's not a sprint.
Yeah.
I think when you're a young comic, you're so like obsessed with these deadlines you create in your head that are so dumb.
And they can be like very, when you don't achieve them.
Yeah.
When you don't achieve them, you feel like the world is ending, but it's like, well, yeah, but look at all the things you achieved while you tried to get to that thing that you thought was the one.
Yeah.
Like you did all this other cool stuff too.
I try to think of 15-year-old Michael and if he'd be like, whoa, that's cool. And I think he would be. So definitely. I'm happy right now.
Did he have an acne problem?
He had a huge acne problem. He'd probably just be excited that cleared itself up. Yeah, exactly. He'd be like, how? What ended up working? And I'd be like, you just got older and it went away.
Yeah.
Stop burning your face off with all the products.
You show him a photo of yourself next to Conan O'Brien. He's like, oh, well, your face cleared up at least.
Yeah, your face cleared.
That's big. 15-year-old Mike Longfellow was probably, were you just like, I mean, were you cracking jokes in the back of the room? Were you like that type of funny or like?
That was when I was still on Adderall. So I was like loud as fuck and getting like, saying annoying thing, doing anything for attention, basically.
Sounds like
I know the feeling. Yeah,
and then I stopped taking that, and I got real quiet for a long time.
I was more quiet when I was on it. I would like Adderall. I would just be this like very silent type. So I didn't want to take it. I hated the way it made me feel.
Yeah,
but it was absolutely. It made you like loud and boisterous.
Only Adderall did. The other ones, I think I did Vyvanse and Concerta. I took it from like middle school to high school because, you know, there's no way I failed history because history is boring. There must be a mental issue. The way they prescribe it, they prescribe it like it's going to make you focus on your schoolwork. But it just makes you focus on what you're already focusing on. So right. I didn't get better at school. I just went from good to great at like sexting and playing Halo. I was just amazing at those now. I wasn't any, it didn't give like George Washington a fat, juicy ass, you know? I wasn't like more interested.
Yeah.
I was always very, very bad at sexting. It would make me laugh whenever I was writing out. And I'd want to be even worse. I'd just be like, I can't, I don't want to write that out. I'd be more like, I just fell over, you know, I can't get my pants off. That'd be the sexting that I would like to say to somebody. I tripped sexting over my jeans. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one time I had phone sex with a lady I was done like a minute in, and I put the phone next to like on the table and muted myself, and I played video games for like 45 minutes. It took like forever. When I was trying, you know, to come. I'd have to like turn it back on and like make a noise to not be rude or something. But I remember being like, wrap it up.
I gotta go.
No, that's all there is. I think that's the only thing you can do if you're not in a relationship right now. Phone sex, FaceTime sex. John, are you Zoom sexing?
Zoom sex, yeah. A lot of Zoom sex in quarantine, yeah.
Zoom, 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 and your boom, boom, boom.
I am lucky to be in a relationship right now. That is true. Oh, I think it's definitely better to quarantine in a relationship than not.
And in a good one, yeah.
Yeah, in a stable, healthy
one. In a stable, good one, yeah. In a bad one, I think quarantine would be maybe the worst place to be.
Yeah, that's true.
With someone you were maybe on the outs with already? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. A lot of domestic violence relationships not going too well for 6-month periods now. The bruises become swelling when it's day to day. But so we're rooting for you people in Kansas in relationships. But I, what else has been going on? We've been, what was I going to say? Oh, we all chill. So you got to see a Turner brother night out in Arizona.
Oh my God. So
how
was
that? You know, what's funny is we didn't kick it a lot. And then, we just see each other at shows a lot and we're always cordial. Right. But then right before quarantine, you and I finally hung out like that week before. I feel like everything shut down. It was me, you, Kellen, Chappelle.
Yeah.
And we all
went
out.
Was great. You came over to my place. That's a big step, you know, going over to the person's place. You were always someone I felt like I was feet away from being friends with, like good friends.
Yeah.
You're always one of my favorite people to see at the shows and everything, one of my favorite comedians. So yeah. I was always like, we'll be friends. We just got to let it happen organically. Don't rush anything. There's no need to keep seeing each other at shows.
Bring me into your living room. That was the key.
I want to come to your house. Yeah.
And then I brought you into my living room. We all had a great night.
And then
yeah, dude, the Turner Brothers night out, man. I'd love to go out with you guys again. You guys know how to have a good time.
That was a fun time.
We did some socially distanced drinking in a couple locations and then went back to the patio. And I think we played I believe we played Peter Gabriel from 3 to 4 in the morning.
Yes.
And I was hesitant. I was hesitant at first. You know, and I still think 10% of that guy is 100% goofball, but
yeah.
But as an overall presentation, I liked it.
That was nuts. If nobody, Peter Gabriel. If anybody hasn't seen Peter Gabriel perform, what Salisbury Hills? I forget what concert it is, but he jumps.
Just play them all. Just start watching all of them.
He jumps on a bike at one point, and it's like your whole world is different. You see things. It's you finally see things.
It's
in your
ridiculous.
Eyes. It is. Ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous live performance, which is why it's so great.
And then I love the crowd shots too. They'll get to the crowd and everybody's leaning 100%
on the same wavelength.
Oh yeah, I like it. Keep riding
the crowd's
that bike.
Like he pulled out the bike.
He's got the bike.
You see the bike? It's next to the piano.
He's gonna turn the bike around.
He says he only brings out the bike on good shows. You must like
it. We played some code names that night too, I believe.
Code names was fun. That was fun.
Code names was fun. I think Longfellow might have been one of the worst code name players.
Which you predicted.
I did. You were pretty bad, if I remember.
You did call that.
I thought you'd be bad. I don't know what it is about your personality, but you're not good at code names at all. And it's alarming.
That's my cross to bear.
And, you know,
it is. It's
I'll have to work on it. I'll have to get better. I did want to buy it after I played it.
I have.
It's a litmus test at my house. Whenever we get everybody back normally, it's like, all right, let's get the code names. Let's find out who you are as a person inside of this game.
And we're also bringing it up because we're just trying to get sponsored by code names.
Yes. Oh. That'd be great. We love you, code names. And that's not a
promo
code name.
Code Turner.
There you go.
Promo code names. There we go. Kokomono names.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
But either way, if you ever want to hang out with us again, we've got four other Peter Gabriel concerts.
Locked and loaded, queued up.
Ready to go.
I would, I'd love that.
John, I'm trying to get John to come to LA. John has never visited the city of Los Angeles. You've been to Venice once.
Yes. So that's in Los Angeles, correct?
I mean, kind
of. Yeah, I'd say it
and
is.
And then we went to, and then we went to your comedy show in what, Echo Park or something like that?
Yeah,
I mean, we were shushed. I was shushed. Here's the thing. I love you, Michael.
You got shushed?
I love the Michaels. I just don't really love LA, I'll be honest. I don't love that vibe that much. I get a lot of it in, or a small dosage of that fakeness in Scottsdale. And when I get to LA, I've had, the experience was shushed in public in LA. Yeah,
shushed a good heroin. I think Longfellow, you were there that night.
Were you talking though?
Were you talking?
No, not even, it wasn't even in, at the show. It was like someone working in the,
I was in the bookstore.
Yeah.
In the bookstore, you got shushed.
I got
shushed. I mean, listen, Story's bookstore is a very concentrated part of LA. You know, that's like an edible. It's you don't have to go there and judge. That's
but
like
no, yeah. I would definitely love to come out and do some more things, but didn't have the best LA experience, no.
There's some stuff to see.
Oh yeah, I trust you to
I mean,
show
getting
me.
Shushed would be enough for me to say fuck this place forever.
I agree.
I don't think anything else makes me consider violence more than that.
Who maybe, in their right mind would ever want to be shushed by anybody?
Maybe it was Echo Park. Is Echo Park is that your hood, Longfellow? Or where are you at?
No, Los Feliz, Los Feliz.
What are we calling it, Los Feliz?
I'm calling it Silver Lake because I don't know.
I don't know what that means, but I'm gonna laugh.
Well, that's why most of the Eagles wrote their first album, John.
That's probably why it was in my head.
Yeah,
I do think it was. Wasn't that bookstore in Echo Park, though? Am I correct?
Yeah, you're.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I believe you are correct, and that's where I feel like every woman there's name is Zoe, and they ironically wear Nirvana shirts, and they're pretty bad people, but they're gonna vote, and we also know. You also know right away that the entire community is going to vote for a man that, you know, they just do not like the current president. Let's just say that in that pocket. You know, so that's exciting.
Nothing wrong with that. I just don't want to be shushed.
Yeah. They think Black Lives Matter, but they don't know any black people personally. You know what I mean? That's mainly the community. But it's fun stuff.
Yeah. I'll come out and visit you guys, though.
Don't speak. They'll hear.
Yeah, they're listening.
They'll hear you.
They'll cancel me. Are you – so what are
they'll
your –
cancel me.
What are your goals to get – are you trying to get canceled 2021, or what are you thinking?
It would relieve a lot of pressure.
Yeah. You know? A lot of anxiety. Yeah, it'd just be over at that point.
I don't think I can get canceled. I don't think I'm big enough to get canceled yet.
True.
I also, I mean, you've seen my act. I don't really toe the line of edgy political humor.
I say we ramp it up this year.
Yeah, you want me to get full political?
I say
all the funny stuff behind. Yeah,
yeah.
We go leave your all best political bits. Set next year, and we do it. I'm bringing you back to the Arizona show. We're gonna do it October 24th. We're bringing Longfellow back. He's doing 20 minutes on the current administration.
If you like Bill Maher, you might like this.
Religion.
You might like this. You also might.
He's my favorite comedian. He's my inspiration.
Who is your favorite comedian, Michael Longfellow? Do you have one?
It always changes. I never answer the question right. I'm just going to say favorite comedian right now, currently. I think Norm Macdonald is always the number one. He just makes me laugh so hard, dude. He makes me laugh so hard. And then I've always loved Hannibal Buress has been like always one of my favorite, not only comedians, but people, the way he lives his life. I like.
Yeah.
Hannibal's a man. Yeah.
Those are solid choices.
Yeah.
Both solid human beings as well.
I would think so. I hope so. I've never met him, but.
Norm, I got to meet. I've hung out with Hannibal a couple of times. A good dude. And then Norm, I've been in the green room with. and it was probably one of my highlights of my comedy career.
Really?
Isn't it funny where you go, you see like stars in LA, but like I was next to Norm MacDonald talking to him. I was like, this is a lot. That was a lot.
Yeah.
Cause you want to tell him so many things that I was like, dude,
you want to embarrass yourself.
Yeah,
you want to, you want to do that. He's one of the few people where you really do want to be like, I respect you so much and I love you, but that's the last thing he wants.
He was so good. He was so cool. And he's talking about a Jack London novel. And as my brother knows, I love Jack London. And he was talking about some Jack London short story called To Catch a Fire. Yeah. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. He's talking about my favorite author. And I don't even have a favorite author. I literally only have one author I read as a child that I've now adopted as my favorite author.
Hey, boys.
Jack London, is that a wolf on your shirt?
That is a wolf on my shirt. So Alaska, got it in Juneau.
That's Jack London.
Yeah, that, Mike Love used it. To rock that. Yeah, that was your look for a few years there, wolf shirt.
Hey, let me go grab my phone charger real quick.
Okay.
My bad.
But
you're good. To Catch a Fire.
To Build a Fire. To spoil the thing, he does not build the fire. And he passes
I think Catch
away.
A Fire is a Bob Marley song.
To Catch a Fire is, I think, the theme behind Usher's Let It Burn.
Catch a Fire. I'm caught up. That's a good one.
I think that's the sequel to Let It Burn. and also, Billy Joel didn't start it. I know that much.
Great song.
There's Longfellow back again.
Hey.
But, Longfellow's a strange cat, too, with your favorite... One thing I will say about Longfellow that I always admired was the first couple years I saw you, not the first couple years, I would say like the first time I saw you. I remember looking at you and you're a young comedian, and then I was a young comedian and I was resentful of anybody that was funny because that's like a natural thing, right?
Totally, absolutely.
And I remember thinking you sounded like multiple people. You sounded a little bit like you had some Mulaney in you, you had some Jeselnik in you, you had like all these people that were probably influencing you as a young comedian.
And yeah,
it's those are my favorite people to see, the ones that like at the beginning they might have a voice that isn't theirs, but you were still, and I say that to say, you were also still extremely funny in their original jokes, but your voice now is like, now you're Michael Longfellow, and it's cool to see.
Yeah,
like, I don't think there's anybody in LA that like sounds like you, and if they do, they're imitating me.
I think everyone does do that in the beginning. Sounds close to
somebody.
Maybe a combination of their influences.
Yeah.
I remember noticing to myself, I sound way too much like Daniel Tosh. Like I couldn't even, couldn't even lie to myself. I was like, you gotta change that. But I think it just comes with getting comfortable enough to be yourself on stage.
Right.
Right? Like, I don't know. Feels like 90% of comedy is doing it so many times you're just comfortable. Like I said earlier.
Yeah. That is very true.
Not 90%. There's obviously craft and jokes and hilarity and the work.
I think a lot of it is that for certain people, because some people are just joke writers and it's like they just write good ass jokes.
Yeah.
And they might never truly become comfortable on stage. Like Mitch Hedberg, you could argue he was never really comfortable on stage. He was just amazing joke writer. And
yeah,
he loved heroin to cope with the anxiety. Shout out to heroin again, big heroin episode. But, but yeah, the ability to become yourself on stage and like people walk away and understand your voice a little bit better. It's a powerful thing. And, cause I know I feel like I probably had that before I had jokes. I felt like I was able to just be myself on stage, and then
you've always sounded like yourself, yeah.
Yeah, which was unique. It was like a unique. I got that compliment early, and I was like, "Oh, that's." It helps you jump ahead of the curve.
Cause, I think I found myself through comedy. I think I started so young; I didn't even have a self yet.
Yeah,
I was like, I was very malleable in trying to make friends and fit in, and kind of, I was still figuring out who the fuck I was.
Yep.
So yeah, that was I don't know.
Interesting. It's exciting. It's cool to see it, and it's worked out for you. And you make me audibly laugh, and a lot of people do not do that. So that's
you as well. You as well.
Audible. You make me, honestly, if I had a vehicle.
It's hard to make a comedian.
I would honk at you.
You flash your lights for me.
I would flash the lights.
Thanks, dude. I'm doing another one of those on Saturday.
Out here in LA?
Escondido, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, like, a little bit towards San Diego.
I love it. Get your reps in. You got anything else coming up? You got anything else lined up? I know it's a weird time to have anything lined up, but.
No, nothing after that. Yeah, nothing after that.
Well, I got some AZ things lined up. If it times out, we'll get you back on that. And then,
yeah, man.
And then maybe John will be out for his birthday weekend or something too. It's his birthday coming up.
We'll figure it out. No shushing. No shushing. That's all.
Come on out to this city you hate to celebrate your birthday.
Well, I'll get 10 people to shush you throughout Venice.
That's a gift that keeps on giving.
But, well, either way, we appreciate you jumping on, Longfellow.
Yeah, dude. Thank you for having me.
Man. Good to see you, brother. Proud of you. Keep killing.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
We will we'll catch up again soon. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, send me a text.
Holla.